Are you insane?
They are insane!
You're in the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate. But meth frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Here's Mark.
All right, so here we are. I'm Mike McCafferty. I just want to talk about Star Trek. And if you remember on one of our previous episodes, we did a horrible misservice to my friend Aaron Moles. We ejected him from the podcast. We cast him out into space in order to make a point about Arium. But it has weighed heavily upon my head. And I grabbed a time crystal and I saw my future. I didn't like it. So I'm bringing Aaron Moles back here for sort of a quick pod trek, a hot take on his thoughts about the last episode, Sweet Sorrows, Such Sweet Sorrows, Part 2, and his thoughts about the entire season. Welcome back, Aaron.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel welcome. It's good that time crystals exist to fix everything.
Yes. They are the glue to the universe. If you grab them, your fate is sealed. If you just touch them, you can still change your fate. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It seems very...
I guess so.
Well, it's very obvious, like especially with this episode. So Aaron, give me first of all your take on this last episode, Such Sweet Sorrows Part 2.
I was amazed by how much the season started off with so much promise and then turned into a cartoon in the last episode. Like that scene with Pike in the elevator and Cornwall on the other side, and then she has to blow it up for whatever reason, and then he's just on the other side of a door.
Yes.
And he isn't affected. And then we cut to an outside shot of the Enterprise, and like a quarter of the hull is blown up. Like that's cartoon logic. Like that's cartoon physics.
You kind of wonder why they didn't build everything on the ship out of that door, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole hull should be that elevator material.
It should be that door or that glass.
Yeah.
I mean, that's strong glass too, isn't it?
Or that glass.
Like
yeah,
Pyrex.
You got to see it.
Yeah. agreed. All right. So yeah. So there are, you have touched upon one of my biggest pet peeves on shows of smart people doing dumb things.
Yeah.
With Admiral Cornwall.
Like the transporter should be able to get her out of there. You'd think.
We can count the different ways that she could have gotten out of this. Right. So one, she could have beamed out. Right. They have transporters, you know, ship to ship, inside, no problem. Two, she could have grabbed that latch and ran into the door really quick because that was a slow-moving door.
Oh, yeah, right.
Three, she could have tied a string around that door release thing and pulled it. Four, she could have
They don't have strings.
They don't have string. There's no string in the 23rd century. But... why didn't they get one of those robots to pull the switch?
Right, yeah. And the robots just conveniently appear when they need it to. You know, like when they paint the hull in season one.
Oh, my God.
And then, they just disappear when they can't use them. Or, like, when the plot doesn't need them to. When the writers can't use them, I should say.
Yes. But here's the thing is, like, those robots weren't even that useful. They're just like, oh, let's go ahead and, like, repair the ship with these crazy robots. Go fight those other robots, man. I mean, they were such... And then you've got the little Roomba robots cleaning everything up, and it's just their their logic on robots is very, very spotty, and including with Control. I mean, Control as robots are also really terrible robots.
That whole fighter scene, like that's like the most un-Star Trek space battle they've ever done.
It's very Star Wars.
It's just like, yeah, it's trying to be Star Wars, and it's like it's just a sea of CGI nonsense that doesn't mean anything.
I was just talking to Aaron before. We logged on, and Aaron does special effects. He does stuff like that. Give me your take on, I mean, that was the most busy special effects laden shots I've ever seen. What did you make of that? Was that good or bad?
Definitely bad. I can see maybe like the AI nanite fighters being a threat, but the fact that the Enterprise just where does all that fit in a ship? Like the again, cartoon physics, like no, it's like a clown car, you know, like where are these things?
they had like three shuttles, and all of a sudden they've got all these weird kind of, for lack of a better term, look like weird like vibrators kind of like shooting out, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody gets these little weird personal like shower massagers that shoot out and attack.
Like, I'm definitely bummed out for the visual effects people that work at it, because, I mean, obviously see a lot of work that went into it, but it's just a sea of nonsense, you know?
And if you're even talking about, like, these tactics are just the worst tactics. So Control surrounds them with like 30 ships or whatever it is. And they are like basically point blank, completely like they're maybe like 500 meters away, circling them, maybe more.
Yeah.
And Discovery and the Enterprise do nothing to alleviate that.
Right.
They're just sitting there, which maybe is an okay thing. It's like one of those circular firing squads they talk about, where all the ships are like basically facing each other.
Yeah.
All the control ships. So there's no tactics in this. They just sit there and like throw up big clouds of you know, little dusty ships, and then a bunch of lasers fly, and it's like a bad Star Wars.
Was there any reason why they couldn't have used the spore drive on the Discovery? I mean, Stamets got impaled, but like that happens after they decided their tactics.
Well, I mean, this is, again, this goes into the larger, deeper, horrible question of, you have to get the ship away from Control. Control is evil. Control is going to get you. You have to get away. You have a spore drive, which can go to a different part of the galaxy, a different part of the universe, a different universe, two different universes, and instead you're going to go to the future.
Yeah.
That is like, Aaron and I, I've been trying to figure out like the best way to record audio here for a while, and Aaron got the privilege of listening to me go through six or seven different permutations of trying to do this. If I suddenly decided that I was going to come over with like a wax cylinder and record his audio at his house, that was the decision to travel into the future. That it makes no sense.
Right. So the idea was to get away from Control, where Control would never find them.
Yeah.
I guess.
They went 1,930 years in the future, because Control could only chase them like 900 years. Like it is so, there are so many logic issues with this season.
Speaking of logic.
Yeah.
Like Spock, they just find like this, where did they land on? What was that?
It was this weird, it was like the hull of a ship. But it was like just some sort of like, I don't know, like some sort of landing deck.
Very convenient.
Yeah. And Control again, like, so all these shuttles are swirling around Burnham in her Red Angel suit, protecting it. Control is not aware of the fact that there's like this like kind of cadre of ships trying to get away. They know they're trying to get the Red Angel, right? Don't they know what they're? I mean,
yeah, that's the bullseye. Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to stop her from erasing Control, but they're so consumed with, you know, give me my data, you know, it's like some sort of weird Verizon plan, you know, unlimited data for me, you know, it's so bad.
So at the beginning of season, they see Starfleet detects seven Red Angel signals.
Yes.
And in this last episode, suddenly there's only five.
There's only five.
So where did the other two go?
Well, she created the six right there. Yeah, it's so, I mean, I went back and I watched the opening episode again. Okay. Just because I was like, you know. Man.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's like seven signals, and they have this overlay of it all over the galaxy. And we don't go to those places, basically, but all over the galaxy.
Yeah.
And they happen simultaneously and they go away. I don't understand what, so now they, the whole thing makes no sense. The whole thing is so bonkers.
It definitely changed and fluctuated depending on what they needed for the specific scene. Is the first episode, like, I remember really liking it. Does it hold up?
When Pike shows up, I mean, again, I once again fell in love with Christopher Pike, and just his no-nonsense, like, let's just go do stuff, guys.
Yeah.
But even he got, like, sucked into time crystals by the end of the show.
Right. Now he chooses to be burned at the end. And Cornwell somehow knew this, but, like, she says this prophetic thing, like whatever's coming your way, you can handle it.
Yeah, like
so
what
she
the
knows. So
what does she know? What the hell? I mean,
yeah.
Who are you? And Pike is right. He's like, hey, I know. I mean, my fate is sealed. I am going to get blown up saving these cadets. So in no uncertain terms, I need to be here because there's no way this photon torpedo will go off.
Yeah.
This gigantic, oversized novelty photon torpedo, which somehow got through the shields and just sits there and beeps. Oh, my gosh.
Tell me about
Spock.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel as though like this was a good arc for like this was a worthy arc for the season for Spock?
Well, I was always curious about how Spock became Spock, so now I have my answer.
Yeah.
It sucks because like the last 2 minutes when he's actually they did that thing that I always hate about prequel series. They did this in the 2009 movie too. Like the last scene is Kirk in the gold uniform on the bridge.
Yeah.
Which it's the most mundane thing, but they make it out to be a payoff. And it's like, no, this is the bare minimum. This is what Spock should have been the whole time. Like, I don't need to see Spock not being Spock. And I feel like this actor actually is better than Zachary Quinto. Like, if you actually make that show, the Pike Spock number one spinoff show.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what people, I want to see that.
Oh, I want to see it. When, didn't it feel like as the end of the season for Discovery, when Discovery is gone, and like they're like, let's go check out this moon. I'm like, yeah, let's all go check out that moon. That sounds like more fun.
Right.
This crew is so much more interesting.
Right. And obviously it's interesting because they didn't come up with it.
They're now folding into canon. Which, you know, I mean, which is fine by me. I mean, I would be happy to watch three seasons of Pike, you know, and number one.
I did like the last shot of the show because it's like when they pull out from the Enterprise bridge to the outside. It's like that first shot of the cage.
Yes.
When they're going from the outside. I like that a lot.
You know,
that's a small thing, but.
It's a small thing. I watched it with Jason last night, and Jason picked up that before I did. It's like that. What a great homage. And I know if you listen to the end music, but they weave the Star Trek theme through the Discovery theme, like the original series.
Oh,
yeah, go back. It's worth listening. It's not overpowering, but it really, in some ways, it really is like, you know what, you guys, this show's really about launching Star Trek Pike, which I think we all want to see. we're just going to send Discovery 1,000 years in the future. We're never going to talk about it in canon.
I love that last montage. Yeah, where it's just like, yep, this never happened.
it is such the sweeping under the rug, isn't it?
Yeah, which is, I guess, how people treat this show anyway. So,
well, it's the one smart thing they've done, which is to say, I mean, and I read that Alex Kurtzman has confirmed that yes, we are going to be 1,000 years in the future. Yes, control is completely dealt with. Which made the reason why they went 1,000 years in the future completely irrelevant. They could have stopped them before they went through that time hole. But they get to. Here's the thing I like about this, and I'll probably say it, you know, when I do another podcast with the Doctor. But when the Discovery crew is going through time, and you see the reactions on their face, on their faces. It is the first time I actually get the feeling that they are in awe of the idea of Discovery.
Oh, yeah.
Like, their namesake is Discovery. And they have they've discovered nothing in this show. They have investigated, they have infiltrated, they have irritated. They've never discovered one thing. Now they're discovering
the mycelial network.
Well, this is true, but they always end up there, and then they're just like, what are we doing here? We got to get out of here. Like, it's never, like, through curiosity. Yeah. It's never through... We should find out what this is about. It's always like, we got to get home. We got to fight the Klingons. We got to do this or that.
Right.
There's never that moment of wonder in them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Like, you see the bridge crew, like, anytime Detmer has a close-up, you can tell how excited they are that they get any kind of reaction shot.
Yes. Those are the actors legitimately excited to be on screen.
Yeah.
Right? I am so much more interested in Detmer and Bridge. What's that?
Owo,
and Pierce is his name, I think, isn't it? Or the communications guy?
Lieutenant Bryce, I think.
Oh, Bryce, yeah, Bryce, yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys, I mean, because they have that kind of twinkle in their eye. They're not know-it-alls exactly. Like Tilly, who would just run up and, like, you know, do whatever they want.
Yeah, right.
Tilly kind of took a backseat the last half of the season, which was okay.
Yeah.
But I if they go 1,000 years in the future and they discover things, it's like Kurtzman already said, oh, the threat is even greater now. I'm like, no. You know, in the Next Generation, the original series, even Deep Space Nine, you know, and Voyager, most of the time it's like, hey, there's something weird over here. Let's go check it out.
Yes. Yeah.
That's interesting to me.
Yeah. I think one of the guys from Red Letter Media said it best, and he said, like, the Star Trek that we knew is a future that we want to live in.
Yeah.
And like this Discovery future has just always been like a bummer. Hopefully they find, you know, and it is interesting because now they get to actually be, you know how like in a Star Trek show, they always find like an old ship that got like spacey, like they find like the space,
Botany Bay.
Botany Bay. So, like, now Discovery gets to kind of be, like, that ship that maybe the future people discover, and we get to see things from that perspective. That could be interesting.
That, I agree with that, too. I mean, you know, in some ways, Star Trek has been treading water ever since Voyager. Really ever since, like, since Next Generation. Because the original series was like, we're going to gee-whiz you with all this cool special effects we've got. Next Generation is like, here's 100 years later. We were going to gee-whiz you even more. And then from that point on, it was Deep Space Nine, Voyager, same timeline, so nothing gee whiz, and then back to Enterprise,
right?
And then 2009 Star Trek, and now this. So nothing's being pushed forward. Let's go 1,000 years in the future and have our crew be awed.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, I like that.
Hopefully they do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, I could spend a lifetime not seeing Sonequa Martin-Green look pained or sad or confused. The girl's got to have some fun, you know?
I hope so, yeah. But the only thing that we know that she likes is going really fast in a suit.
Yeah.
It's the only time she ever expresses any joy in any of the episodes.
Yeah, although she did scream halfway through it, too, when she was, like, going through the wormhole.
Oh yeah.
That was cool special effects. I don't know what you thought about that, but I thought that was a cool representation. Yeah.
It was very. It's a little like Interstellar, but it's fine. Yes. It's what that would look like. I could buy that abstract kind of glassy universe bending look. I liked it.
The sort of the two dimensionality of the universe suddenly like flipping over like it's like a postcard or something. I kind of liked that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I mean. You go back to the Enterprise, and everyone's having a pretty good time, you know? I mean, even Spock now. Spock, I'll probably talk about this later with the Doctor, but, man, with Ethan Peck with his beard shaved, whew, that's a rough patch. That's a rough patch, man. I was totally different guy all of a sudden.
Yeah, he was also playing a different character entirely, too. It's kind of a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah, no longer emo Spock. He's now, you know, totally okay Spock. But, like, with beard Spock, like, I kind of buy him as sort of a Leonard Nimoy, sort of, and then with a beard off, like, ooh.
Maybe he's a baby Spock.
Yeah, maybe give him a couple more seasons of bearded Spock just so we can, you know, feel okay about that.
He had the voice down. He did sound like Spock, like, you know, as much as he can emulate that.
Yes, he had the voice down more than Zachary Quinto. Who always has kind of a higher register. His is almost a little lower than Leonard Nimoy's. But there's still something about Leonard Nimoy that you can't quite capture with these guys.
No one can. Yeah.
He has a lankiness to him, and almost if you watch him, like he's always kind of caving in his chest. It's really weird. Like it's like this kind of 60s skinniness where it's just like I'm just skinny, I'm not trying, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not fit.
Like he's in a band.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's in a band. Exactly. Yeah. Maybe it's like some sort of like punk band kind of analogy now. I don't have any that much tone, but I'm skinny. I smoke, you know, so there's like this kind of weird emaciated look to him already. Deep voice. I don't know if they'll ever be able to capture Spock, or Kirk. Who knows? I mean, like Kirk, I think they've kind of punted on that and said, well, you know, we're not even gonna try that. But
I did think that, like Pine as Kirk was better in Beyond because he wasn't trying as hard.
Yes.
No one was trying as hard.
Yes. They'd finally relaxed into their roles and then they canceled the franchise. Like good work guys. Never again.
right.
Yeah, that was like my favorite part is when they were just relaxed and saying, let's just be who we are. Because we played Kirk now 3 times. I am Kirk now. That's who I am.
Yep.
I think that's the moment that, you know, now Anson Mount just kind of came right out of the gate, full on Pike, and I bought him from the word go. It's like, great. Yeah, go ahead.
Pike was only captain of the Enterprise for like a half hour in the 2009 movie. So it was really refreshing to see Pike just be Pike.
Yes. And Bruce Graham. That's
unexplored territory.
Yeah. Yeah. He was always like, you know, someone I think wrote on Reddit or something, say he was just cannon fodder, literally. Like every time he got, you know, crippled or killed in those movies, like, man, you know, I mean, what made him great? Like, who cares? He's just like this weird father figure. But here we get to see Pike
being great. He had a great presence. Oh, was that?
What's that?
Sorry. Oh, yeah. No, he had a great presence. Yeah. He had a great, Bruce Greenwood had a good, I bought him too.
I buy him, like, presence-wise. If we're looking at the three, I would say Bruce Greenwood had the most presence, and then Anson Mount, and then Jeffrey Hunter. Hunter was playing it sort of under... He was at this critical moment in his career in the cage where it's like, I don't know if I want to go forward or back. I don't know if I want to, like, quit Starfleet and leave. So he played a little weak. And this Pike is on the other side. Both Pikes... You know, basically, in further on, are past the Talosians and are now into the point in their careers where it's like, you know, I've gone through that fire. I'm ready to be in charge again.
So, yeah.
Which is nice. I mean, it's exactly what the show needed. And then, so what do? I guess they leave. They go 1,000 years away from any authority figures that can help them right the ship and take. Filippo Giorgio with them. So.
Oh, right. I don't think that show is going to happen now. What do you do?
Boy, her performance in these past couple episodes have been really, really rough.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, to the point where they're inserting Kung Fu in there, like to like give her stuff that's more her wheelhouse. I'm like.
Exactly. Yeah. That whole boss fight at the end was, I mean. It's what she does best, I guess.
I mean, kicking a robot's always a good idea. Like, okay, so I have shot this robot, no effect. Kicking it is the next best thing.
I wouldn't want to touch something with, like, an AI thing. Like, you don't know what it's going to, like, the Borg. Like, you don't want to touch those things because they might shoot wires out at you, but...
I
guess there's no rules.
No rules. Section 31 is completely... irrational, irrelevant. The robot screamed at the end.
I hate how there's like a Section 31 badge that they're just like wearing out in the open.
Yes.
Like, hey, I'm Section 31. which I guess they kind of cleaned up at the end. Now they don't. Now Section 31's beneath the surface.
But
I thought that was ridiculous.
I thought that was ridiculous, and I thought Starfleet's whole, like, well, you know, it's, yeah, it failed, but we just think it needs to, like, I mean... This failed whole cloth. There was nothing positive about this. In no point in time has Section 31 been a benevolent thing. All it's done is been evil, hired evil people. Mirror universe.
It was okay
Hitler.
when they were first introduced. I like it was the Tribbles episode of Deep Space Nine, I think.
Yeah,
and they're just talking to Sisko. They're like, you don't really know anything about them, and then they just go away. They just kind of take his record down and then leave, and that's it. Which I thought they were fine in that role. And even in Enterprise, like they're kind of, it's the early, there's no Federation yet, so they can kind of do that there too, where there's like forces on Earth that are trying to like subvert Starfleet or whatever before it forms. So I think in those two contexts it worked. It didn't work at all in Discovery.
If there's a shadowy organization, like some sort of cabal within the government, and we all like to believe that, you know, like sort of very X-Files-y kind of stuff, that's fine. But when you have a debriefing after a giant space battle and an admiral or whoever this guy is, like, let's never see his face, I guess, says, you know what, there was a lot of mistakes they made, but we're going to stick with them and we're just, you know, going to make you acting head of Section 30. No. You don't put evil in charge of stuff. That was bad. That was a bad choice overall. I am mystified by the Section 31. I was reading on Reddit, people were just saying, how can you ever rectify the idea that you've essentially... How can you humanize Philippa Georgiou from the Mirror Universe, who was essentially Hitler, who essentially slaughtered billions of people? How do you redeem this character? What is the redemptive qualities of that? I mean,
she knows how the sausage is made, so you got to put her in the undercover evil group.
But think about it, like if there was like an NCIS Hitler or NCIS Osama bin Laden, I mean, are we still rooting for him or her? I mean, it's just such a weird, I know they're working on it. I mean, but I wonder if at some point in time, I know they're writing the pilot still, if they're going to pull back from the brink and say, you know what, we're going to commit resources to Pike and we've got the animated series and we're just going to hold fast on this and see what happens. Cause these are our strong leads.
For sure.
This whole expansionism is really kind of, it's becoming problematic. And I think they just kind of raced off to do everything they could at once. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron, this was supposed to be our quick hot take, but we went too long. No, it's good. It was good. I like talking about this stuff. I think this was, give me a letter grade for this season. Discovery got a...
Okay, well, there's a bad robot scale and a, you know, Roddenberry Berman scale. So the BR or the RB scale.
I like that.
So as far as bad robot stuff goes, I mean, I got to say the Enterprise, the new Enterprise, the bridge and everything, and Pike, like, I can't give it a failing grade because there's actually some things that I like in this season. And I do think it was better than season two, despite being complete nonsense at the end. I'm going to give it a C+ relative to Discovery's D in season one.
Interesting.
Maybe a C.
I'm right there with you. C+, maybe a B- if I'm feeling generous. Like, I mean, I go back and forth because like the earnestness of the storytelling was a lot more focused, but it is kind of a big coagulated mess every once in a while. And, like a C+ feels, you know, about right. Like a 69%, you know, or I'm sorry, like a 79%, like, okay, you tried, still not good, but you tried.
They put some things in there that I like, so I can't fail it and I can't be too hard on it, except, Michael Burnham's like the problem with a lot of things. And they started to kind of rehabilitate a character with those conversations with Pike early on, and then they just kind of went back to frustrating Michael Burnham.
You mean like at the end when she became the literal angel? Like
oh, and also people were predicting that she was the Red Angel the whole time.
Yeah.
Then they throw a curveball, where's her mom? And then it's her. It's like, what?
Again,
she's
this
the answer to everything.
Yeah, she is. That's the problem. Yeah. And it's a tiny universe where it is her mom and her... all saving the universe over and over and over again. She's the center of this universe, and that's a problem. There's no room, there's no oxygen for anyone else in this world. So,
and I want to like her, but they just keep doing stupid things with her.
She's a good actress, and she's a good, you know, interesting character. And now all her backstory is cleared. The deck is cleared. Go be a fun character.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, honestly, I mean, looking at number one, I'm far more interested to find out what her story is. I'm far more interested in Detmer and what, Oahu. What is her name? I can't remember her name.
I think Oho, but it's short for something.
Yeah. Like, those characters are far... Like, Low Gravity Head Dude, the big alien head guy, What's his deal?
All right.
I want to find out what
yeah.
These guys are far more interesting because they don't solve every problem and they're not, you know, they don't throw themselves in the middle of everything. They have to make those critical choices.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, Aaron, I am glad that we have rescued, that my Red Angel tactics have come from the past to rescue you. You know, Michael could have rescued Arium too, to be honest. I mean,
that's right. She could. But there wasn't a Red Angel signal, no. So she couldn't go there.
Yeah. We could talk about the Kelpians and their spaceships. There's lots of things we could definitely dig into.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
But I'm going to save that because I still owe talking for to sure. To Kim and Jason. But you are now part of this. You have joined me in this armada against the plot holes that is Section 31. Thanks for coming back, Aaron.
All right. I'm glad I'm out of the vacuum of space.
You are. And for those of you out there listening, Aaron also is part of our Facebook page. He pops up from once in a while, has very salient comments. You are welcome to join us on our Facebook page, listeners. And gosh, I was going to add this as like a part of a larger podcast, but I think this is just going to be a standalone. We'll just keep on releasing. I'll just keep on reviewing this last episode over and over again with different people.
Series.
Yes, exactly. I'll just do like a 10-part series of my review of one episode. Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us out there. My name is Mike McCafferty. Your turn here. You say. My name is Mike McCafferty. I'm Aaron Bowles. Aaron, are you there?
Oh, and I'm Aaron Bowles.
Yes! I almost spaced you again, Aaron. And then you'll answer this question. I just want to talk about
Star Trek.
Yes.